Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I get to talk with a storyteller first. This is so exciting because Lindsay McCray works with, as a freelancer, and she works with American Patchwork and Quilting's family of magazines. She writes for other industries and other areas out there, and I really am excited because she wrote a book, and the book is all about stories and storytelling and how people use that to create quilts. And so I'm very excited. Lindsay, thank you for being here.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Pat. I'm really excited too. It's funny to be on this side of the interview.
I know. You've interviewed me many times.
I have.
I know. For all kinds, for Moda, for American Patchwork. It's crazy.
Right.
So you are a quilt maker, but you also do other types of art.
Well, I do. I love to quilt, but I love to do all kinds of sewing. I made a top this weekend, and I love to knit also. And I was for many years a weaver and a spinner, and I love all textile-related things, and I love color. So I enjoy all those things.
So I always think, Lindsay, I always think of writing as actually being creative. My first career was as I wrote code, programming code, which I thought mm-hmm. was creative. And so now I write a lot of things. So do you feel that way? You know, when did you discover writing, that it was a first love for you?
Well, my mom likes to say that she knew when I was little that I was going to be a writer. Apparently, when I was 7, I wrote a story called Stan the Man that she still has. But it wasn't for many years that I actually wrote professionally. And I when I was actually 40 years old, I went back to school and got a master's in journalism. When that was when I sort of decided to write for a serious profession. So I worked for about 13 years for the University of Iowa. I was a writer and editor, and I interviewed everyone from engineers to groundskeepers, and I just found that everybody who really loved what they were doing were just they were so much fun to talk with. And about maybe 11-12 years ago, I started writing for American Patchwork and Quilting, and of course getting to combine textiles with people who are passionate about what they do just made me super happy. So but I do feel like it's creative work, and I really enjoy that.
Yeah, that's the perfect job. You get to talk fabric and textiles.
Exactly, yeah.
And get paid for it. Yay.
Exactly, yeah. All right.
So your book focuses on quilt makers and the stories behind those quilts and how those quilts came about. When did this idea start to develop for you?
Well, I think it was something that happened over time. I'm a Californian who married an Iowan, and we moved to Iowa. And when we did that, I noticed that my friends, I was weaving and spinning at the time, and I noticed that my friends who were artists and who were just decorating their house used very different colors than I did, and I didn't quite understand it. And then we moved back to California, my husband and I, and all of a sudden I realized, my sense of color comes from seeing the ocean. And from, you know, the blues and greens and the different light that's in California. And I think that was when I first started thinking about how where you live or where you grow up affects your color sense. But as I interviewed a lot of people, and I was thinking about it today, one of the people I interviewed for American Patchwork and Quilting was Tula Pink. And, you know, she's a Californian who moved to the Midwest, and she's designing ocean-themed fabrics from Missouri. But she told me, she said that the Midwest has affected her color palette, you know. So I started, as I interviewed all these different people and talked to them about what inspired them, these quilters and designers, I think that's where the idea developed for the book.
So the book is called Art Quilts of the Midwest. Now, you had to sort of narrow it down because there's obviously so many people make something from textiles. How did you work on the grouping you wanted in here?
Well, I put out a call for entries at a lot of different, you know, Studio Art Quilters Association and many other sites and blogs and that sort of thing. And we had almost 100 people enter. And that the rule was simply that you needed to submit work that had been influenced by life in the Midwest. And people could say, you know, what that influence was, whether it was you know, their neighbors or not having neighbors or, you know, the fact that they had a garden or that they lived on a farm or they lived in a city or whatever the influence was, that was their choice to make. And I had two artists help me, and we juried the work in to narrowed it down to 20 artists, which was challenging. There was so much beautiful work submitted. And then I interviewed each of those people, and that was very fun.
You had a number then that you thought, okay, I can get it to this number, and and working from, that's a lot of submissions to narrow down. That was, must have been a hard job.
It was, and it was because they were so good. I mean, I feel like it's made the book a really strong book because we had so many wonderful choices. You know, people always say, it's so hard to choose, but it really was hard to choose.
Well, tell me one of the stories from the book, The Quilt Maker, what inspired her quilt? What about the Midwest inspired her quilt?
Oh, there were so many good stories and so many things. One of my favorites is a woman is a woman, Lou Ann Reimel, who's from St. Louis. And she's a photographer. She loves photography. She's very interested in time. And she goes, her pieces that she submitted were based on photos that she took at the Bell Fountain Cemetery in St. Louis. Hmm. And they're details of sculptures that are in the cemetery. And she focused a lot on the hands, and they're just intricately stitched. I got to see some of her work in person. I went down and gave a talk in St. Louis, and oh, they're just amazing. But the story that she told me that I especially loved was that she prints the images of the photos before she quilts them. She has a 17-inch printer, and she prints them on flour sack towels.
Oh.
And she uses flour sack towels for two reasons. One, they fit her 17-inch printer. But the really interesting reason to me was that she said, you know, she remembers as a girl having to do the dishes. And she hated having to do the dishes. But she and her sisters did the dishes, and she realizes in retrospect that it was this wonderful time when they would talk and sing songs and laugh, or, you know, maybe fight, but it was a real time of conversation. And she said when she started dating her husband, his family was very, very quiet, and she was used to this sort of, you know, noisy family. And it wasn't until she would go in the kitchen to help her future mother-in-law with the dishes, and her mother-in-law would hand her a flour sack towel, and she would dry, and then her mother-in-law would start telling her stories about her son, Luann's future husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said she really felt like those flour sack towels were sort of a conversational conduit almost, you know. And I just love that story. I just thought that was such a great story.
That is a great story. I haven't read them all yet, so I'm like, I didn't get to that one. I was like, that is a fantastic story.
Yeah,
oh, my goodness.
It is. And I also like that it, and she liked, too, that it relates to women's work, you know, for many years. I mean, it kind of honors women's work if you think about doing the dishes, and that was important to her. So, anyway.
There was one that I thought the one part was interesting was Gail Barr, and she's from Buffalo Grove, Illinois, and she does these hand dyes for her work.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about that one a little bit?
Well, one of the things I thought was so interesting about Gail, if you think about being inspired by your surroundings, she actually grew, although she lives in Illinois, she grew up in Minnesota, and she said that she just saw big open spaces and great big barns, and every summer her family would drive to Lake Superior, and she remembers seeing these huge barges on the on Lake Superior, and she just loves big shapes. Mm-hmm. And she also taught, her colors are so beautiful, but she says she's been very careful not to use too many different colors in a single piece because she feels like that takes away from these big shapes that she just loves. That was another story I really, everyone had a great story, you know. I mean, I don't know if you have time for one more story.
Tell one more.
Yeah, so Bonnie Peterson is from Houghton, Michigan, and hers, it's one of the pieces that I've not seen in person, but I would so love to see because there's so many details. She did what looks like a crazy quilt, basically. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it, it's all charts and graphs, and she has scientific definitions that she free motion quilted into patches and then sewed them on. And her piece came and learning all about limnology, which is like water science, and she translated that into a crazy quilt, and it's just, it has a great big rusty crustacean, which was an invasive species, you know, applique on there. And it's just really cool.
Oh, that is. Give me, we have like about a minute and a half, let's say. So tell me, what can a person do to develop their sense of using their surroundings and making a project?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of it is just paying attention, just kind of really noticing what's around you. And, you know, I was also thinking, Pat, when I was thinking a little bit about this, how one time I think you had a story in American Patchwork and Quilting that I interviewed you for about you took a photograph of some tomatoes in a basket mm-hmm. at a farmer's
right.
market, and you translated that into a quilt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very much, you know, sort of what it is seeing what's around you. And you can be influenced by the shapes, by the colors, by textures. Mm-hmm. I have a friend, Jenny Gordy, her patterns are made under the Wixton name, and she's quite a bit younger than I am. We grew up in different parts of the country, but we were walking around Quilt Market last year, and we both realized that we loved these little blue and white floral prints. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it came to us that my mother and her grandmother had blue and white dishes, and that they reminded us of home, you know?
Yeah.
So I think sometimes those connections that you make that you might not really be aware of, but if you mm-hmm. stop and think about them, can really provide some inspiration and then take you in another direction in your designs.
And also pull it in. Don't you think, Lindsay, pull in the idea tighter rather than the big, broad, you know, topic? Go
yes.
sort of deep on it.
Yes, yes. I think that's really right to really have that focus, because I think that really gives you a much stronger piece, a much stronger quilt or art quilt.
Well, I want to tell everybody before we sign off for a break here that you have written lots of the interviews at American Patchwork and Quilting. Most recently, you did Bonnie and Camille's interview for the magazine.
That's right.
So,
yeah,
so people can be following and looking to see what you write. So this has been so much fun. I appreciate it.
Oh, I just enjoyed it thoroughly, Pat. Thank you so much.
We are going to take a break, and before we do, I want to say that Jaftex, who is the parent company of Henry Glass Studio E and Blank, is celebrating its 85th anniversary. Yay! Happy birthday! 85 years as a fabric company. And American Patchwork and Quilting's blog is going to be the first stop on September 1st of 2015 for a month-long celebration. We'll be right back after the break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to talk again about how quilts are designed, how things come about, and how we portray images. And I am very intrigued by quilts that are realistic. They look like what you're portraying, like a photo. And so Sue Rasmussen is an artist and a lecturer, a teacher, and she creates a wide variety of quilts, but one type is quilts that look a lot like the image that we're looking at. So Sue, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me, Pat.
I wanted to know, you have a fiber education, but Did you plan to get that right out of high school?
No. I actually went to college to become a vet.
Oh.
And was a biology major. And I had a kind of a blackmail blind date, and my grades pretty much went south. And so I needed to change majors pretty quickly. And surprisingly enough, all the requirements that I had for getting into veterinary school allowed me to get into textile science advanced degrees. So that's where my background is in textile science.
Okay, so just real briefly, what does that mean? Like that you could print it, those kind of things?
Well, it has to do with dye stuff, how fabric is manufactured, how it's dyed, how it's printed.
Oh, okay.
But more importantly, how it's, for instance, fire aspects to different types of cloth, inventing new different types of cloth. When I was in school, rayon was really just becoming coming into its own day. So most of the studies that I was involved in had to do with rayon.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about that. So we've learned something new. But besides getting to talk about quilts, so I asked you in advance, could we focus on your quilts that are look more like photographs and how you do
mm-hmm.
that? Because you have a wide variety of gorgeous, gorgeous quilts and projects for people to look at. But when did you first think about taking like a photograph or making something realistic in fabric in a quilt?
Well, actually the first quilt that I took from a photograph, and it was a picture from a birthday card that a friend of mine had sent me. And that was 35 years ago. Now, I was pretty much very young, right out of college, didn't really have a quilting background. And basically kind of did a hit-and-miss pictorial quilt with that. But over the years taking classes, I've learned many, many different techniques, but have really kind of stayed in the genre of a pieced quilt, taking that photograph and translating that into a pattern which will enable me to piece the entire project.
Yeah. Well, what you have projects on your site under landscapes and pictorial quilts, everything from a gorgeous bird to an intricate bridge that's just blows my mind. It is so amazing.
Yeah.
So are you taking the photograph yourself or does somebody in your family do that?
Both. I am not really a photographer. My photographs are amateur. But we, you know, my husband and I love to travel. We take photographs, and sometimes I will even use photographs that have been taken and are owned by other people, but I always get their written permission to use their photograph as my inspiration if I do choose to do that.
Right.
I generally try to take my own photographs, and they're not of great quality, but they're enough to allow me to get the design from it.
So would you tell me a little bit about the process? Now, you also lecture and teach, so people can look for you, you know, and take a class in person. But can you give me the sort of basics of how you take that photo and make it into a quilt?
Right. Well, I take lots of photographs of that subject. Mm-hmm. So if I'm taking a photograph of a flower, for instance, I might take it in different stages of that flower from different angles. And there are lots of different ways of making a pattern now. I can take that photograph and import it into an iPad and using several applications. I can make the line drawing directly from that photograph using the applications.
Mm-hmm.
Or generally what I've been doing is I take that photograph or multiple photographs and cut out the images or break them apart into what I want in my quilt and tape those images together and then trace that. And I'm tracing the main ideas. I'm not tracing every single detail of every flower or every animal, but the general idea. And then I make sure that I can make that into a pattern that has pieceable units. So it's a lot like putting a puzzle back together again. And it's interesting, most quilters love to do puzzles, and I think that's inherent in our idea of putting fabric together mm-hmm. with other fabric and matching shapes and so forth. And so that's really the concept that I have, is if I have a unit that is sewable, I can sew that unit to another unit and create a whole quilt. And from there, I take it down to a copy shop, and I tell them that I want it blown up to whatever size of the quilt that I want. Mm-hmm. And they have a wheel that will determine that size of percentage of enlargement. And they run it through their engineering enlarging machines for me, and out pops a pattern, and I'm ready to go. Mm-hmm. I create the templates using freezer paper. And mm-hmm. then the real enjoyment for me is the auditioning of the fabric for the quilt.
Yeah, that must be so fun to, you know, be able, because you have images that are very realistic, and then you also have them with very playful fabric choices that are,
yes,
you know what you're looking at. But so let's just use the example of your bear.
Yes, Miss Violet.
Yes, Miss Violet.
Yeah. So, well, I had made a grizzly bear, the Glacier Bay bear, for a cruise that I taught, and that was the bear pattern that we worked on the cruise for 4 days. Mm-hmm. And when I got home, then I thought that he looked so lonely by himself, and he really needed a friend. And so I kind of challenged myself to using only the fabrics that I had. I was not going to go and buy any more fabrics for this Miss Violet. So I just pulled out the purple dots that I had and kind of challenged myself to use what I had and make a kind of a child's quilt that one would put in a baby's room, for instance, and just made it fun with the dot fabric.
Yeah, it is delightful. I mean, I want to make a bear now just to make that one. That's like...
Well, I have lots of baby bears. I think about 500 bears from people that have taken my class walking around. So I feel like I have a lot of little babies running around.
Oh, that is so funny. Tell me a little bit about shading of the fabrics. How do you approach that?
Well, for the realistic images that I try to achieve for my grizzly bear or mountain lion or the elk or pictorial quilts like that I'm really trying to achieve a realistic look, it really is about the value of the fabric rather than the color. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with the texture of that fabric. So I rarely use any solid fabrics. I'm using something that, or I tend to purchase things that have a big variety of movement and shapes and color within that fabric. And how I shop for fabrics is that I often will go into a quilt shop with a laminated piece of white paper that has a 2-inch square cut out of the center. And I will take that and run that over fabric, which allows me really to focus on what's inside that 2 inches.
Oh,
and
that's a good tip.
And by doing that, I can look at, say, some big flower or floral batik, but by focusing in on that 2 inches, well, that might be the perfect nostril for a wild ram.
Right.
And one would be distracted by all the other things that are going on in the fabric, but this way I can really look at the fabric on kind of an individual area and see how or in what way I could use that somewhere down the road in one of my quilts. And when I buy fabric, I don't generally purchase it for a fabric that, or for a piece that I'm working on. I'm buying fabric because somewhere down the road I will need it.
Yeah, I like that. So Sue, we have just about a minute and a half because this goes really quick. Can you tell me, you have a good information about batting that I wanted you to share with us.
Yes. Well, batting, as you know, does not have a straight of grain. Straight of grain only refers to woven fabrics. But what most quilters do not realize and do not utilize with batting is that every batting has a directional strength. And you can determine that directional strength when you take that batting either off the roll or out of the bag, and you do the little test on the corner where you're kind of gently pulling it in each direction. Mm-hmm. One of those directions will have more resistance than the other side, and that becomes your directional strength. And that directional strength, really for the stability of a wall hanging or any kind of textile wall art, needs to go from the ceiling to floor. And because gravity has a huge effect on textile arts over a matter of a three-week period, it can distort it. And so utilizing the warp and the weft of the fabric so that the warp thread is going along the backing fabric and utilizing that directional strength of that batting, and then using the warp thread of the fabric really can fight off the tremendous pull that gravity has on our textile art.
That is so interesting. I am now going to look at batting entirely differently.
And I actually make a little... have a lot of the. I have so many of these little things from my textile background that really affect quilts and quilt makers. Mm-hmm. And when I give my lectures, I get people coming back saying, oh, my gosh, I never realized that, or, oh, that's right. why my quilt did this, or, oh, right. that's what happened. I wish I had known that. So many little things that we just don't realize that do affect our everyday quilting.
Yeah. Sue, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Pat. It's been really an enjoyment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. AllPeopleQuilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish, learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and you can catch up with Sue Rasmussen at Sue, Rasmussen, quilts.com. So you can go there and see her work and where she'll be teaching or giving her talks. So now I get a chance for the second half of the show to go a little bit more detail with Heather Jones. And Heather and I have known each other a really long time. And I am just always very happy to have her come on and give us a little update on things, including we're going to talk about her book. It's so exciting. So hi, Heather. How are you?
Hi. How are you? It's so good to talk to you.
I know. We have been talking for many, many years. I can't even remember when we first started writing to each other, reading our blogs and stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. It's maybe like 2011. Maybe that's when I was trying to think. It's 2010 or 11, I think. But yeah. It's been a while.
Are you? You know, your style from when I first met you is like you're like it's like totally different.
It kind of is, isn't it?
Yeah, you were doing children's clothing. You know,
I was. Yeah,
and selling finished goods, and you were writing about making some quilts, but they weren't the kind of quilts you make now. Are you kind of surprised that in just like 5 years, how much you have changed your work?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's I am. It's been kind of interesting, and it's been very organic. I mean, like you were saying, when we met, I was making children's things for babies and young kids, a lot of bibs. You know, I would draft up a pattern for bibs, and people loved the bibs. I mean, and it started out after, you know, creating for my own kids. My kids were very young at the time, and I was just making things for them, and then, you know, people said, oh, you should start an Etsy shop. Friends wanted to buy things, and that was when Etsy was really first starting off. So I, you know, opened up an Etsy shop and focused on things for babies and children just based on, you know, things that I wanted to make for my own kids. Mm-hmm. And made a few quilts, made some quilts out of their clothing, you know, that they had grown out of, really simple patchwork. And I had made a couple other quilts, before that, but didn't start out as a quilter by any means, for sure.
Yeah. I always see, and then you started making them, and then it was like your style. Yeah, then your style just started zooming along. It's like, to me anyways, it's like, wow, it's been fun to watch, because I just love your aesthetic. I think it's really, it's something I don't personally work like that, but I just love to look at your work and like, wow,
oh,
this is
thank
so
you.
Cool.
Thank you.
It's, you know, I would like hang your work as art. That would be like in my house.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, and you know, it's funny that you say that too, because, and I think we've talked about this before, you know, my background is in fine art. I studied fine art and art. And I really think that, you know, my background in those areas comes through in my quilts and my patterns. So I don't think you can, you know, separate the two. I think they're, you know, kind of there for a reason. So I think that's where I draw a lot of that kind of inspiration from.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about your book. And this is your first book, right?
My first solo book. Yeah, I've had some things in, you know, other people's books, kind of collaborative type books, but yes, my first solo book.
Yeah, it is gorgeous. It's called Quilt Local, Finding Inspiration in the Everyday with 40 Projects. 40 projects, Heather, that is a lot of projects. You were sewing
a lot. I was sewing a lot. It's, you know, it's 20 different patterns, and then I did each pattern in two colorways. So that's where the 40 comes from. It was a lot of work, and I did it all myself. I did all of the designing. I did all of the piecing, the sewing, the quilting, everything. So I was busy this past year.
And did you do all the photography too?
No, the photography was done by a wonderful photographer from Sweden named Jenny Halligren.
Okay.
So Jenny did the photograph.
Okay. Did your quilts go to Sweden to be photographed?
They did, yeah. Oh. Isn't that funny? On a book called Quilt Local, it's a little inside story for your audience. But yes,
don't tell anybody.
I did not get a go.
That's like,
yeah, we won't tell anybody. No, it's funny because, I didn't get a go, unfortunately, but they went there. And then Jenny came. So Jenny photographed the projects there, and then she actually came to Ohio where I live. For 4 or 5 days last August, actually about a year ago. And we did some photography for the other chapters of the book.
Yeah. So I like the cover because it is also just reflects your work. I mean, and how your work feels. Did you design that? I mean, did you have an input to it or how'd that come about?
I had a say in it. I worked with Melanie Falick from SPC Craft. She was Melanie was my editor, and she was an amazing person to work with. And you know, all throughout the project, we had talked about the best way to showcase my work. As you know, a lot of my quilts are very minimal in design, so they're really simple and yet really bold and graphic. But a lot of them are really, you know, kind of minimal in design. So we didn't want the design of the book to overwhelm the simplicity. So we, you know, we had this idea, you know, from the inception of what we wanted to photograph and how we wanted to photograph the work. But I did have a say in the cover. We had we worked with a book designer, a great book designer, and she gave us four or five different versions. So I was able to vote mm-hmm. on, you know, which my favorite was. And then, you know, mm-hmm. Melanie had to say, and other people at the publisher had to say, but mm-hmm. I'm really happy with the one that we chose, or the one that was chosen for the cover.
Right. I mean, the covers are very important, and the people in the yeah. industry have so much experience that, you know, yeah. sometimes what we think might be a great cover, they know, well, this one's actually going to be the great cover because, you know.
Right. So. Well, and you're and right. And you know, and the whole process, I mean, I've done some publishing before in books and magazines, you know, one project here and there. Mm-hmm. But I totally trusted my publisher and my editor. Yeah. Because, you know, like you say, they're the experts. They know what they're doing. And I mm-hmm. Completely trusted Melanie's aesthetic. I mean, I've been a fan of her work for a long time. So yeah. I knew that she, I mean, she obviously knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
I was happy to follow suit.
Yeah. So tell me the format concept of the book.
Yeah. So the first part of the book is... there are four chapters. One is on finding inspiration in your everyday world, kind of giving, I give some tips on how people can do it, how I do it, and how hopefully other people will do it as well. I've got a chapter on color theory, and it's not, I mean, color theory can be so overwhelmingly complex, but I've kind of boiled it down to what I think is the most important elements for really any creative people, but quilters in particular. Mm-hmm. And then I have a chapter on how the process goes, at least for me, from finding inspiration and then transforming that inspiration into quilt designs. And then there's a chapter on basic quilt construction where I cover everything from cutting and piecing to pressing and binding, kind of everything in between. And then the second part of the book are the chapter, or I'm sorry, are the projects. So that's mm-hmm. where the 20 projects and two colorways come in. And each project, I got some information about the inspiration, what was the inspiration behind the design, and then also I talk about my reasons for choosing those colors and fabrics that I did. So, you know, each project is a lesson in color theory in and of itself and fabric selection. So a lot of hopefully useful information for people out there.
There really is. I like the layout of it. I thought maybe we could just talk about a couple of points so mm-hmm. that when people get the book, then they'll get more, read all the detail.
Sure.
I like the beginning. In the beginning part, you have a few habits to be meaning things that will make us, I think, more aware.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you use these habits yourself?
Yeah, there are four habits that I have in the book that I use when I'm looking for inspiration. And the first is to be aware. I mean, I think we're overwhelmed by technology and just the speed of life and our everyday life. And it's easy to kind of you know, lose focus on things mm-hmm. and just, you know, because everything is going by so quickly and things are happening so fast, but it's really good to, you know, just be aware of your surroundings. I mean, it sounds so simple, but, you know, take the time to look around you and open your eyes and see what, you know, stands out to you. If it's, you know, color that you see somewhere, or, you know, maybe the graphic design of, you know, I don't know, some tiles that you see. Mm-hmm. So just being aware in your daily life. And that's kind of related to the second habit, which is to stay present. Mm-hmm. And that's another hard thing to do, again, just with our fast-paced life. I mean, we're all so busy, but, you know, it's really nice to kind of reconnect to yourself and your creativity, you know, even if you have to get up really early, if you know, before everyone else in your house is awake, or a lot of people meditate. Really, whatever you can do in your own life, to stay present. I try to find myself in a quiet spot as much as I can, you know, to kind of reconnect mm-hmm. and stay present. And
now
then
also,
the third
habit. Can I bump in there?
Yeah.
You have children, you know, elementary school age children. Do
yeah.
you find like
yeah.
the staying present helps you then also just to be aware with your family and everything?
Oh, totally. I mean, yeah. you know, I think anyone who has children will agree it goes by in a blink of an eye. I mean, my kids are now, my son just turned 9 and my daughter is 7 and a half, and it's just like they were babies yesterday, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, if you don't stay present, you miss a whole lot of stuff. So it really is. Yeah. Not just in quilting and crafting and whatever your creative focus is, you know, stay present in your life. I mean, it's just really important because, yeah, I mean, it just goes by so quick. And it, yeah, I do. I really try to stay present, especially in their lives as well. Because like I said, it just goes on. And don't you feel like the older you get, the quicker it goes by?
Oh, yeah.
That's how I feel. I mean, it's just like
it's
unbelievable.
Like, it's it's the end of August.
It's like, what,
already?
It's almost September. I know. Tomorrow is September. It's crazy. And we'll be saying that, you know, next it'll be December. And then it's just, it's unbelievable. So yeah, stay present and try to make the most of your time while you're here. So the third habit is being open to surprising sources of inspiration. And, you know, some of my work has been inspired by random things like painted grids in parking lots and silos at barns. Or I'm sorry, silos at farms. So, you know, inspiration can come literally from everywhere and anywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's really important to kind of listen to your creative self and figure out, you know, what inspires you. And it doesn't have to be, you know, what someone would typically or traditionally find inspirational, like, you know, beautiful flowers, although they certainly are inspirational in and of themselves. But, you know, just be open to whatever it is that may inspire or excite you. And then the last habit is to take photos and notes. And that is where our lovely cell phone comes in.
Yes.
Really handy. I mean, we all have cell phones and they're all equipped these days with great cameras. And so most of us have our cell phones, you know, on us all the time. And it's so great if you see, you know, something that catches your eye to be able to grab your camera on your phone and take a quick snap no matter where you are. And then, you know, even take notes in your phone. You know, you might want to say like, oh my gosh, I saw this most beautiful pattern on the architecture of this building. And, you know, just as a little reminder to yourself when you've got more time, you know, to get back to your sewing space. Yeah, then you can go back and take a look at the photo and what it was about that thing that inspired you.
We're going to take a break, Heather.
Yeah.
And then when we come back, I want to first do a little bit more on the book about how you have the pattern things laid out with the inspiration part of it. So we'll be right back after the break.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make 1, 2, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and this show is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. You can visit Moda Fabrics online, go to the Moda Bake Shop, find all kinds of fun stuff. So I'm talking with Heather Jones about her book, Quilt Local, and we're going to talk about some other things. So Heather, one of the things, your habits are that you explained are amazing, and I just think that they're so good for all of us to think about. But I also like that then you give us that in the front, and then when you come back to each of the patterns, you explain it. You sort of, you don't say, here's habit one, you know, not like that, but you have
right.
what you were doing, the story, just like I talked to Lindsay in the beginning, the story behind the design, which really is almost as important as the design to me.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think it's, to me, it was important to share where, you know, especially with the theme of this book too, it was important to share what it was about the object or place that inspired me. So, you know, it was it the color? Was it the linear qualities of the, you know, design? What was it that I found interesting? And, you know, then go from there about how I based my design, my quilt design, on the inspiration.
And you have a picture of your notebook on everyone where you take the photo.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I took those photos, actually, for the book.
It's wonderful.
Thank you. What I did, you know, and what I did with each of the projects is I printed out the photograph that I took on my phone of the inspiration. And, you know, those, they're not meant to be beautiful photographs. They're just really documentation for me on, you know, gathering that inspiration. But I had them printed out, and then I always start all of my designs in a sketchbook with graph paper. So I've got a photograph of the, in the book, of the photograph of the inspiration and the drawn design in my sketchbook.
I was going to say, you draw all of your things like that with the colored pencils.
I do.
You're not, like the whole layout, right?
Yeah, no, I draw. I start with pencil and then put color in with markers. And, that's how ever since I started to create my own quilt designs, that's how I've always worked. And it's really not technical at all. It's really simple math. And I go through the process of that in the book as well. So if people want to, try their hand at designing something, you know, based on inspiration that they find, I give information on how you can do that as well.
Well, this is – everybody needs your book, I tell you. That's really wonderful.
Oh, thank you. It was, you know, certainly a labor of love, and I'm really excited. And I have to say, too, Denise Schmidt wrote the introduction, which was just, the foreword, which was really just so great. I mean, and such an honor for me because I'm a huge fan of her work.
Yeah. So, one of the things that we've talked about off and on, you and I, and, with many people, is that is about encouraging people to do their own thing, to love what they're doing. I mean, I love reading what you write just because you're always out there as a big proponent of quilt makers. What is one thing you can tell people who want to try working like this, but really have, they're not really sure?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just follow your own heart. I mean, follow your own gut, what your instincts tell you in all aspects of life, but especially being creative. It's really, it can be hard to put yourself out there, especially, as a creative person and putting your designs out in the world. But I think if you stay true to yourself and what you get excited about, then it's going to come through in your work, and it's going to show through in, the authenticity of whatever you design and create. So I think that's the number one thing I would suggest to people.
And I really like how you did the photo and the drawing together to keep it like that. So if people haven't tried that before, I think it's a nice way to sort of tie it in. And maybe it wouldn't be one photo. Maybe it might be a collage, depending on the person's work style. Yeah. So the other thing I want you to touch base on was that you work with a lot of solids, but you also have in your book the quilts are done with prints as well, right?
Yes. And it's funny because you and I have joked about that before. I love solids. I mean, I love beautiful prints as well, but I love the control I have over working with solids. But I wanted to – so a lot of the projects in the book or the book is – made with solid fabric. But I did include some prints because I know not everybody loves solids, and that's okay too. So there are some projects with prints as well.
Yeah. So it's nice to be able to see them done in the two different ways. So that gives you a good way to judge how it's going to look when you change up the fabric.
Yeah. Right. And I think any of these projects, even the ones that I've done in solids, I think any of them could work really well with prints as well.
Now, you go out and you do some traveling and teaching, but you also have some online classes because you can't be everywhere.
No, you can't. I do travel a lot, though. I've been traveling a lot for me past couple years. But, yeah, I've got online classes available through Creative Bug. Mm-hmm. And if your listeners aren't familiar with Creative Bug, they're a really great website. It's a website where you can pay a subscription, and the subscription is $5 a month. It's like $4.95 a month for access to everything on the site. So not just my classes, but anybody's classes. And we've got classes with Kate Fassett, Liza Lucy. I mean, some great quilters, but also there are classes on painting and drawing, knitting, all types of mm-hmm. creative, different types of creative processes.
So they can go to creativebug.com and then under the quilting, find your classes, Heather. So that's a mm-hmm. nice way to take a workshop with you and learn, and be able to repeat it and watch it again.
That's right. That's right.
So you have some new things going on. You're doing some single patterns too?
I am. I've offered patterns for a couple years now, single mm-hmm. patterns, primarily through PDF. And so I've got everything as PDF on my website, but I'm in the process of also offering them in print as well for shops if they're interested in picking those up. That's a whole another ball game, getting everything ready to print. That's a huge task, but we're working on that. So hopefully by the fall I'll have everything in print as well.
Yeah. So have you're making a lot of quilts, just like many of us in the business do. Mm-hmm. Are you keeping all of your quilts?
I keep most of my quilts. I have made some on commission. I have had people contact me and commission me to make a quilt, and I've done that here and there, and I'm going to offer some for sale as well, some kind of stock patterns. They'd all be actually most of them would probably be custom made because, I want the handmade quality. I don't want, any mm-hmm. type of manufacturing other than things made by me. But that is, people have asked for a long time. So, and that's one thing I love. I mean, I'm a maker, at heart. So I love, mm-hmm. Making things. So that's one aspect that I'm excited about.
And what are you writing about lately when you are out on your website? I mean, because blogging has changed so much from when we started.
Yeah, it's it has.
Yeah, we all have found sort of new paths, right?
Yeah. I love Instagram. I mean, I look at Instagram kind of like mini blog posts. And, as a visual person, I love that you can get these beautiful pictures from all of your people, that and love. And, things that catch my eye, I like to share as well. So when I was writing the book, I didn't have a lot of time for blogging at all. I do love blogging, though. So I really have been trying to blog more regularly, maybe once or twice a week. Because there are, limitations of what you can share on something like Instagram or Facebook. So I do love the ability to share more on blogs. So I know, it has changed a lot, but I think it's still a worthwhile place to share information.
Yeah, I do too. You can't get mm-hmm. the depth that you want to portray with just one photo and a few words,
Right. You really can't.
No, you can tell your story better when you go to your website. I always think of them as articles now. It's like we write our own little, storybook or whatever you might call it at our website.
Right.
Just like you share one of your new patterns here in August where you show the quilt and you show the fabric selection and your drawings and your beautiful points on your gorgeous piecing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think you're talking about my Marrakesh.
Yes.
Pattern, and I use prints. I use 7 different prints, which was that's a lot for me.
Yeah, I'm proud of you.
But they were beautiful. Oh, thank you. Yeah, they were beautiful. I used Amy Butler's new Bright Heart fabrics for that. So she had asked me if I wanted to work with her prints, and of course she does beautiful, amazing things. So of course I said yes, and she's a dear friend of mine too. So it was really fun to work with her prints because I just usually don't, for a long time. I've just worked with solid. So it was, it was a fun project. And I also thought I wanted to design something that really allowed those beautiful prints to shine. So they're, it's big pieces, you know, because they look so different once they're chopped up. So it's a really good pattern for, to showcase beautiful prints that people have and collect.
Yeah. I like that. I like that too, that the shapes are large and you get to really
see,
and there's large scale prints. So you can't really, you know, you don't want to chop them all up.
That's right. I know. There's sometimes they're just too pretty to cut up. That's the thing, you know, especially with our work, you know, these beautiful florals, you think, oh, they're just so beautiful on their own. So yeah, that was a fun project to work on.
And we can only wallpaper so many rooms at a time with fabric.
That's right. You know? That's right.
So let me just ask you one more thing. When you go to a quilt show, Heather, what is sort of the thing that grabs your attention first?
I think it's antique quilts. I've always loved antique quilts and vintage quilts. And I've, you know, even before I was quilting, I collected. So I'm always excited to look at those. Those are my favorite parts of quilt shows.
And will you actually purchase them, or you sort of just go to get inspired?
I do. I purchase them, but also inspiration. I do. I have a collection of quilts. I've been buying. I mean, I think I bought my first antique quilt when I was like 16 because I had a great aunt who had an antique store, and I would always buy things from her, and I found a beautiful quilt. It's a grandmother's garden quilt that I got from her. But yeah, I mean, I love the fabrics. I love, you know, the imperfections and the piecing, and that you can really see the hand of the maker. I love that. So I love lots of things about antique quilts.
Yeah, I love
totally
them too.
Inspiring.
Yeah, I love to know that there was somebody doing what I'm doing, what we're doing years and years and years ago.
Yes.
It's kind of like our history of quilt makers.
That's right.
Yeah. So, Heather, this has been so much fun. Congratulations on your amazing book.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. I loved catching up with you.
And everybody can visit you at heatherjonesstudio.com.
Yep, that's right.
Okay. Well, thanks so much. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can go out and visit us at allpeoplequilt.com. And remember that American Patchwork's blog is going to be on September 1st of 2015, the first stop on the tour to celebrate the 85th anniversary of Jaftex Fabric Company, which is pretty exciting. And I'm Pat Sloan, so you can visit me at patsloan.com.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.